Up next on High Plains Morning, I am so thrilled we've got Matt Botter on the phone. He is a saxophonist, a guitarist, an all-around pretty cool guy. He is a composer, and he is in charge of a very important mission. He heads up Hearing Things, the new album from Hearing Things. This is coming out March 2019, folks, and High Plains Public Radio is pretty thrilled that we got an advanced copy. So we've had some of these songs in rotation for a little while, Matt. People on the High Plains know who you are. So thank you for coming on the air finally and revealing yourself.
That is amazing. Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for playing my music.
Dude, we've been hearing things for a while.
Same here.
Yeah.
Waking nightmares and the whole thing.
Oh, man. The music on this album is such a blast. Tell us about the name of the band. Where did it come from?
Well, it came from exactly what it sounds like. I was actually hearing the sound of literally hearing the sound of the music as I approached my practice space. I thought that someone else had booked the space, and I walked in thinking I was going to have to be like, why? I have the space now. Why is this amazing band playing in here? And I don't know where the music was coming from, if it was just my head or if down the street there was, Lee Allen playing on the jukebox, but I walked in and nobody was in there, and I'm just hearing things, and that's what I'm going to do. This is it's a sign, and so I kind of already had a real idea of what the music should sound like and a title at once, and went to work from there.
It seems like that's probably an easier way to initiate a project is have the title and what it sounds like at the beginning.
Sure. Yeah, it's not always the case. Yeah.
So it all started with an audio hallucination, and you weren't concerned you needed to go see a doctor. You were just like, I need to start a band.
Yeah, that's right. Well, music is our doctor.
Oh, is it?
As well.
That and essential oils, right?
Yeah. Tell that to the insurance people.
We don't know them. We work in public radio.
Okay.
We can't afford to go to the doctor. Are you crazy? Hey, I don't need to tell this to a saxophonist at all, do I? Okay, so this band is a trio, and jazz trios, which y'all are not necessarily jazz. You kind of, there are just too many things going on. I would say it's just kind of like whipped together. The everything about the music on this album just delightfully obliterates any genre, like a Vitamix blender on high. I mean, we're talking surf rock, soul, very boppy-ish kind of jazz, R&B. There's definitely some Afro pop beats in there. Obviously rock and roll, a lot of like music that makes you want to twist. How do you land everywhere and nowhere with these compositions? And you've got three different people that you have to keep track of. Yourself, obviously, you can control. You've got two others, your bandmates, JP and Vinny, on organ and drums. That's a pretty spare arrangement, but the sounds that you get, the way they move, it's so big and it's so full. I'm just curious, how exactly do the three of you negotiate that?
Well, could start with just a stylistic thing that you were saying. And one thing that I think holds it together is a fascination with this era when instrumental hits were a thing. And they're not so much anymore. Maybe there was like in the 80s, there was Axel F.
Boop, 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 doop, boop, boop, boop,
yeah.
Boop, boop,
and Rocket. Boop,
boop. Yeah, Rocket. Forget Rocket. Yeah. So good.
But before that, it kind of had been, there's not a lot. But in the early 60s and late 50s, there were tons. And the most famous would be like Tequila and Green Onions, Walk Don't Run, Sleepwalk. And a lot of those did sound very different. They were Latin influence, or they were rock and roll, or like space age bachelor pad music or something like that. So I feel like our music, it has that idea in mind. Instead of like a jazz exploration of it can go on forever, it's supposed to be an instrumental hit that fits on a 45 and is 3 minutes long. And so with that kind of time framing, cutting it down to that, it actually could be a lot of variety of what that 3 minutes is, or what those songs, what direction they go in.
Now tell me a little bit about the research that went into kind of figuring out this really specific, while wildly disparate in different genres and where it goes, it has a very, very specific aim. It feels very tight. It feels like I get this message. And I'm wondering, with all those different genres that it kind of evokes, what did you do in order to kind of get to that? How did you know that you wanted it to be kind of surf rock heavy and have those kind of riffs to it versus having more softer sounds?
Well, it also goes into the similar fascination with that era of late 50s, early 60s. And then I would, when I was traveling, playing for other bands and horn sections, I would, on my downtime, go to record stores and thrift stores and just go through 45 piles. The ones that I was most drawn to were the ones that were uncategorized, unorganized.
Scratched to hell.
Yeah. just 25 cents, and you can just flip through them and look for a font or the little sticker. Sometimes they're designed really beautifully, or there's nothing on it, and you can tell it's a really independent record. And I would have a little player with me and just listen to a little bit of each one, and I started to develop a fascination with certain sounds. So some of it's a baritone guitar or bass six, like a tic-tac kind of guitar sound that I started to really love, but I ended up playing a lot on this record myself. I overdubbed that after playing the saxophone. Honking saxophones in kind of a rock and roll New Orleans tradition is another fascination. And the organ sounds, farfisas and transistor organs, which is what JP plays. When you put all those things together, it starts to become pretty specific. Even if the styles are very different, those sounds, you end up in a world that melds it all together.
Now, tell us a few of the kind of names. Now, I know these might be some obscure, 60s bands, but tell us some of the names mm-hmm. The ones that really just jumped out for you.
Well, a lot of them I found through deciding that I needed to know more about the saxophone players that I've heard my whole life, mm-hmm. Plyles Johnson that played Pink Panther. I always knew Pink Panther, but I didn't know there was a guy named Plyles Johnson. And when I listened to all of the rest of his records, I realized that that was somebody I really liked and had a lot of interests in common with albums that he had made.
Not enough people named Plaz either.
Yeah, it's amazing. He's still alive.
That's great.
A lot of the people that I would mention now aren't, so he's going strong. He was in the Wrecking Crew, so on countless records. And then people I'm mentioning right now are kind of the kings of this. King Curtis was a big one, who played Yakety Yak solo on that Coasters hit. And I also really love Yakety Sax, which is Boots Randolph. I mentioned Green Onions before, so Booker T and the MGs. None of those are obscure. Those are super mainstream, but I found a lot of stuff in these bins where I've never heard of that. When you put it on, it's like they may even be obviously ripping off Green Onions or something like that, but the sincerity in which they do it is something that drew me into it. So I kind of thought, it's okay to just really go close to some things, but find your own voice in it.
Honestly, I would listen to an entire Sirius XM station called Ripoffs of Green Onions. That sounds like a great afternoon.
Or like the bands that had a big hit and then kept on making other songs to try to repeat the success of the formula of that hit. And I really love those songs that come after that. They aren't really that as strong as that first one, but there's something, just the thought process of okay, how do we get another one out of this?
Yeah.
Tequila is like that. There's a bunch of other versions. One by the saxophone player who went by Chuck Rio, and he made a song called Margarita on his own, and it's great. I really love the Margarita track.
That's great. Well, it seems like listening to the ones where they're obviously trying to market off of something that was a one-off success, you can almost kind of see through the lines there and reverse engineer what it is that they were really going through. And it kind of polishes off the edges of what is this thing, right? The fifth time in.
Sure. Yeah, it's informative of, how they got to the first one. Yeah.
That must have helped with, when you're composing, because you're the primary composer on these songs, I wonder, What do you start with this? Because I know you do a lot of different types of music. You've been like a session musician. You've toured with a lot of different indie rock bands, but you've also done your own, very kind of like experiment. How do you say experimental? That's like a word like interesting. It doesn't mean anything, but your album Day in Pictures, is very much more traditional jazz where you kind of feel like, you're sipping a margarita and or additional tequila on. I just felt like it's so relaxing in the way that kind of traditional jazz is. But with this, it feels very, very different. And the energy is high and definitely the components of having the other two in there. But you're the band leader. You're the one who's composing it and calling the shots and crafting it. And they're there with you.
Yeah. When I was touring with some of these bands, name drop, I was touring with Arcade Fire and before that with Iron and Wine. I was around some very charismatic performers and saw how to put a band on stage and connect with people. With Arcade Fire, there's a lot of outfits and lights and effects and all these things, but with Iron and Wine there wasn't. It was just in a theater, but there was a thread between them where I saw, like, okay, this is how you present something to a lot of people and confidently show them what's in your mind and what you want to convey to them.
It's like any art without the white jacket.
Well, I feel like we wear these white jackets. It's an interesting feeling because it really gets a rise out of people. Like in the jazz world, there's definitely a contingent of jazz musicians that wear suits. They're kind of like a Wynton Marsalis kind of neo bebop crew that does that. But for the most part, jazz musicians kind of they might look good. They might just wear a sweatshirt, mm-hmm.
They're cozy.
Yeah, and I wanted to just like convey that like we rehearse every week. We thought about this. We put a lot of work into the songs and how we present it, and so we put on a jacket.
Love it. How do we go about explaining, like, J.P. Schlegelmilch and Vinny Speranza? These are your organist and drummer, respectively. Yeah. Where is it? Where are they in this little ziggurat? It seems as if because each of you, I'm assuming, are, highly trained, how does that work within this kind of sphere where it's like, This is what I'm presenting. This is the song. And are they pretty quick to say, like, yes, I get it? Or is it kind of a, you have to work through it? Like, what's the process there when you're introducing a new composition?
It's different for everyone, but sometimes, like for instance, the song Tortuga, I brought in, I only had a little nugget, but quickly Vinny was like, started playing that beat, and I didn't have that in mind at all when I first had the riff. And so all of a sudden it became this other thing and felt like a garage version of a Ray Charles song. And so we ran from there. And then that was kind of one rehearsal. And then I go home with a tape of that and I listen to it. Oh, it needs a B section. And sometimes I'm just walking around, listen to the recording of the rehearsal and boom, the B section comes in my head or something. And next rehearsal I say, I very poorly play on the piano or something, like, okay, this is how the B section's going to go. And they're looking at me like, is he going to make it? but then eventually they figure out what I'm trying to show them on the piano. And then we put it in and then we just keep playing things until they get deeper and deeper as you play them more. And then when you tour with it, it becomes more etched in our stone brains.
And now with the getting it completely crafted and, getting all of the components down for the actual recording so that it's laid down the way that you envisioned it versus the performance, is there a little bit more of like kind of a crust of fungible foam within the performance? Because you have a very dynamic performance when you three are together on the stage. It's high energy and it's just really fun as each of you take, separate points of the stage, of the composition. Is there a little bit more room for improvisation there, or is it a pretty tight circle within each of you as you go through any of these songs?
A bit of both. Like, we stick to kind of the game plan of the songs, and some of them have some spots where you can go pretty far afield, and other ones have more traditional kind of forms, like a blues form or something. And we definitely stretch out a lot more live. And for the album, I wanted to keep this kind of feeling of each song could be this hit that goes on a 45. So they didn't. Some of them stretch a little further than that, and they're maybe 5 minutes long, but for the most part, I tried to keep them around 3 minutes and under.
Now, this music, we mentioned that it's definitely inspired by a lot of things from the, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, and it really does. It feels like the future, but like the future of the past. And I'm wondering, how is this positive music right now that you make relevant to the struggling masses of 2019? What is it that Hearing Things has to say and whisper into the ears that need some hearing?
Wow, that is a... My hope for it is that the sounds are open-minded and played with a respect for other cultures, that when people hear the sounds, it inspires them to feel the same way and to open their minds to, you know, when you hear a mariachi band or something, you could say, oh, that's cute or something, that's not my culture, or that is my culture, that's serious, or that's not my culture, but I can hear the humanity in it. And so that's where I come from with, you know, you hear in some of the songs some Middle Eastern and North African kind of tonalities, and I don't have any ancestral claim to be playing those tonalities, or I didn't study under a guru or anything, but I approach it with a respect for those traditions, and I feel that it helps me connect as part of the world.
Everyone everywhere shares the same notes.
I don't know if that's true.
I don't know if it's true either. I think that there are some notes that are very specific to certain people.
Well, there are tunings that are specific to different regions.
And there are Tuvan throat singers that can sing five notes at once.
Sure.
Well, yeah. I have to ask, you're a saxophonist primarily. You also play the guitar. What other instruments do you play, just in general, maybe not on this album?
There's also a little bit of bass clarinet on the album, and I play clarinet and flute. Yeah, that's mostly what I play. I do some other production things with pianos and keyboards, and I dabbled on brass for a bit, but I'm not going to subject people to that too much.
Thank you for your service. I'm sure you did swimmingly. I do have to say, the saxophone, in my experience, is sometimes a very polarizing instrument. And just after the banjo and the accordion, do you think the sax is the most loathed instrument? It's hard to ask a saxophonist this, but I mean just objectively.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you get this like sexy sax guy idea, the saxophone. You know, I always think when somebody comes up to me and they say, I love the sax. Or they say, oh, I hate the sax. I always think that they're talking about the same saxophone. They're talking about this sexy sax man thing. You know what I'm talking about.
Like, Rob Lowe in at the beginning of St. Elmo's Fire.
Exactly. Greased up and doing that. So
Steven Seagal ponytail.
Even the deepest place where that comes from, I really love, like David Sanborn, Grover Washington Jr. Like, I feel like that's the roots of that sound, even back to King Curtis. So I don't know. I'm not doing any justice for the saxophone. I'm just pontificating where it comes from. But
it's the instrument that chose you, though.
Yeah, you know, things become what's that called? Not a meme, but a trope.
A trope.
Yeah, there's a lot of sax tropes. I don't know. Yeah, I think that strong reactions are good. So if it's polarizing, it's probably worthwhile.
There you go. Conversation is being had. Now, what kind of artists or bands are you really into right now? Whether it's something that's kind of, you know, going into what you're doing with Hearing Things or with your own, you know, solo compositions, or something completely unrelated just to kind of get out of your head?
Oh, well, it's always very, very spread out lately. I've been listening to a lot of Bach and Beethoven.
Nerd.
yeah, that's no fun for anybody.
It's so much fun.
Hearing Things has done some, we did some Halloween shows recently where we did Bach music with surf beats, so it could be fun. And I also knew people, I'm always a little bit of a retro nerd, so I'm not always completely up on everything. I really like Shabaka and the Ancestors. If you know that saxophone player, Shabaka.
Yeah, I know that name. I'm just writing down everything so I can start pulling this stuff and playing it on the show.
He's really good. I follow him on Instagram, and I like his whole thing. A lot of the international anthem stuff I think is really interesting.
That's like Micaiah McRaven.
Yeah, Jimmy Branch's band, and Keir Nieringer's Irreversible Entanglements with Moore Mother. That's some heavy stuff.
That's some heavy stuff. The only comments I really have noticed that when I try to play really experimental jazz, that's the one where I get little emails where it's like someone who's a longtime listener is like, what is this? So I feel like that is the most challenging genre for High Plains Morning listeners. So I don't completely shy away, but there are times where I'm like, I might fade this one down. But I just know that there's a special ring in hell for people who fade down experimental jazz halfway through an 8-minute song. And I don't want to be that person. I know that there's a space there that doesn't need to be interfered upon with my fader on my desktop here.
In that realm, they're doing the work that it gets. It's like a trickle up.
Mm-hmm. It's a short story. You have to pay attention. You have to stick in for it.
Yeah, with great risk, there's great yield. But other things that I get excited about is, back to hearing things in the working. Saxophone players that I have a simpatico with. There was a guy named Herb Hardesty who played with Fats Domino and Little Richard, and he was alive until, I want to say, a few years ago, and somebody got in touch with him and got a bunch of tapes from him and put out a bunch of music that originally was released on 45s but weren't hits or anything, so you can never find any of them. And that's it's kind of like the perfect music as far as hearing things is concerned.
Yeah, those are some deep cuts. Those are the kinds of things that are going to be in the bottom of that 25-cent stack.
Hopefully. If you're very lucky, yeah.
Well, how can folks find your music and find more out about your band Hearing Things?
We are at hearingthingsmusic.com, and we're also on Facebook. I believe it's Hearing Things Music on Facebook as well, Hearing Things Band. If you just type in Hearing Things, you'll get some mostly mental health issue.
Yeah, you'll get the Mayo Clinic.
But you know, there was a crazy thing happened when I decided to call the band Hearing Things. Of course, I was Googling it a lot, trying to figure out if it had already been taken. And I found a website, I don't know if it was hearingthings.com or hearing-things.com or something. And it was a company that they were making underwater microphones. I don't know, I guess I kept looking through the website to see who it was. And it turned out it was a guy who was in my previous band that played doo-wop, a band called White, Blue, Yellow, and Clouds. And he had moved to Australia, and that kind of like broke up the band. So it was sort of like the predecessor band to Hearing Things. The guy moved to Australia and started a company called Hearing Things. Completely separate of
it. Wow. Is that a coincidence? That's very bizarre.
I wrote him about it, and he said, yeah, go ahead and have a band called that, too. but yeah, it is some cosmic connection.
Those are the best kinds of connections. Intergalactic and cosmic connections. Well, Matt Botter, thank you so much for your time. Thank you, and best luck with the release of Here's Hearing Things. We're going to keep it in full rotation here on High Plains Public Radio. And folks, it's hitting out there March 2019, and you can get it at hearingthingsmusic.com.